Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to my session about SharePoint 2010 and Silverlight. For the people that don't know me, my name is Jan Tielens. I'm from Belgium, and over there I work at UTU, where we do a little bit of SharePoint training, including SharePoint 2010. Now, before I'm going to get started, maybe there are some people who attended the SharePoint conference earlier this year in Amsterdam. Over there, I did almost the same presentation as I'm going to do today. So if you would like to see something else, if you already attended that session, feel free to leave and join another SharePoint session. I will not be offended, but it's pretty much the same content as I discussed, what was it, like 2 months ago, something like that. Okay. So we're going to talk about SharePoint 2010 and Silverlight. And what do we have on the agenda? Well, first of all, I would like to tell you the story about Silverlight out of the box in SharePoint 2010. We're going to see that Silverlight is used quite a bit in SharePoint just out of the box, and I'm going to mention well, the different scenarios over there, including the Silverlight web part, which is a pretty basic web part that will allow you to show any Silverlight control inside the context of SharePoint. Of course, this session is all about building your own custom Silverlight web parts. So we're going to talk about deployment, how we're going to build our own Silverlight web parts. I'm also going to show you some advanced techniques, build Silverlight web parts that have custom properties, for example. And to finish off, I'm going to show you a new capability in Silverlight 3 and 4 that will allow you to run Silverlight applications outside of your browser. And I think that's a great opportunity for you guys as developers as well to make use of in SharePoint 2010. First of all, what's the story about Silverlight in SharePoint 2010? Well, as I already mentioned, here and there in SharePoint 2010, just out of the box, Silverlight is being used to have some nice animations, some fancy representations of graphics, that kind of stuff. Now, the cool thing about Silverlight in SharePoint 2010 is the fact that when you have the Silverlight client installed on your client operating system, Silverlight is being shown. But if you're not running Silverlight on your client, it doesn't mean that SharePoint will break, but SharePoint will present you with a more basic UI. So there's always a fallback scenario, let's say. If you have Silverlight, it's great. If you don't have Silverlight, it's not that great, but you still can make use of the functionality. On my slide over here, I displayed a couple of examples. For example, the create dialog that you may know in SharePoint 2010 is actually a pretty cool Silverlight control. We also have a thing in SharePoint 2010 that's called Visio Services. And what is Visio Services? Well, basically said, Visio Services will allow you to visualize a Visio diagram in a web page, and behind the scenes, Silverlight is being used, or Silverlight can be used to visualize that Visio diagram. You may be thinking, why is that interesting to mention? Well, the cool thing about Visio Services is that it's being used by workflow in SharePoint 2010 to visualize the progress of a workflow, for example. I'll show you that one in a second. It's pretty neat. Besides Visio, with Visio Services, we also have other Office applications that can run inside the browser if you are making use of the Office web applications. For example, there's a version of Word, Excel, PowerPoint that can run in a browser. And if you're running Silverlight, that client application in your browser will also leverage it, of course. A very quick demo, a couple of things that I just mentioned. This is a plain SharePoint site. First thing that I can note, that I can show you, if I go to create more options, this is a thing that you probably have seen a couple of times already, where I can select a template that I would like to make use of, like a document library or a team site or a document workspace, whatever. Well, this is actually a Silverlight control. You can notice that if you click on the different sections over here, you see a pretty nice animation that is going to allow you to pick your templates. You can also do filtering over here. If I look, for example, for a custom, I will find, for example, my custom list over there. Now, you can always verify if the thing that you're looking at is Silverlight or plain HTML. If you right-click on well, this control, you can see the Silverlight menu item, so this is really a Silverlight control. Once again, if you're not running Silverlight in your client, then well, you can still make use of this dialog, but you will see the HTML version, which is not as fancy as this one, for example. Another thing that I quickly would like to show you over here, I've got a document library, just a plain document library, in which I uploaded an expense note for Jan. And well, in our company, let's say, we're only going to pay those expense notes if there is a manager that has approved this expense note. So what I already did as preparation, I associated the out-of-the-box approval workflow in SharePoint 2010 with this document library. And as you can see, the workflow, the approval workflow is already in progress. And you can see we're running the workflow. And if I switch to my task list, you will see there is one task which has been assigned to Wim. Wim has already approved, and the second task is still waiting for the approval of Jan. Plain approval workflow. Why do I show you this? Well, if I go back to my document library, I've got over here the status of this workflow that is in progress. If you would click on this link in SharePoint 2007, you would be redirected to the SharePoint history page that would summarize all the information from the history list, like when the workflow has been started, when tasks are created, completed, that kind of stuff. We still have that information in the page that is sitting behind this link, but you will notice if you navigate to that page, your workflow is actually visualized. See over here, I've got the workflow, and the workflow visualization is making use of a Silverlight application. It's available out of the box, so behind the scenes, this is Visio Services that is doing all that visualization. And this is actually a pretty nice one. Now you can see, you can zoom in, you can zoom out, and notice that, well, I can actually see the task assigned to Wim. You can see that the task has been completed because we've got a small checkbox in front after it, and we're still waiting for the approval of Jan. If I would go to the task assigned to Jan, if I would complete it, we would see that this diagram will get updated as well. So it's a very rich visualization, let's say. Just a couple of examples how Silverlight is being used out of the box in SharePoint 2010. Now, there's one thing that I haven't shown you, which is quite important to know about. Also available out of the box is the Silverlight web part. It's a very basic web part that will allow you to show pretty much any Silverlight application inside the context of a web part. That Silverlight application can be hosted in your SharePoint context, but it can also be hosted outside of SharePoint, for example, coming from the cloud, something like that. By the way, when I'm talking about a Silverlight application, you probably know a Silverlight application is typically built into a XAP file, a single file that has the extension XAP. And usually I compare that XAP file with, let's say, the SWF file for Flash animations, that kind of stuff. That's the equivalent for Silverlight. So because of the fact that we have that Silverlight web part, it means that it will be very easy for you to show any Silverlight application that is already done inside the context of SharePoint. Let me show you very quickly how that is going to work. I've got over here a very exciting Silverlight application, which is a very fancy clock. Well, it's not very fancy, but it was the most basic example that I could find on the internet. And I would like to display this clock inside my SharePoint 2010 site. First thing that I need to do is I need to make sure that a XAP file can be downloaded to my client computer. And now it's sitting on my desktop. And in SharePoint 2010, that is very easy because, well, the thing that I can do is I can just navigate to my document library and I can upload the XAP file in that document library. And you know, everything that's in a document library can be downloaded as well. Everything gets a URL, so I'm just going to point to the clock.xap file on my desktop. Let's hit OK. And I'm going to copy the URL of this clock web part to the clipboard. And let's navigate to the home page to show the web part over there. I'm going to edit this page. Let's maybe put the web part over here. Let's insert the Silverlight web part, which you can find in the group over here at the left-hand side, media and content. See, there we've got the Silverlight web part. Let's click add. The only thing that you need to fill out when you're going to make use of that Silverlight web part is the URL of your XAP file. Remember, that was the URL of the XAP file inside the document library. Oh, so that's okay. There we go. You will notice I will not see my very fancy clock just yet. In beta 2, there's a small issue. It's going to get fixed, hopefully in RTM, but no worries. I was expecting this. And before I continue, I'm going to set the width of this web part to, let's say, a variable width. Let's click apply. And let's save this page so we can see the results. And there we go, we've got that very exciting clock now being displayed. Now, this clock is just an example. Think of it as every single art application that you can just upload to a document library, show it in SharePoint without writing a single line of code. What I'm going to do next in the rest of my presentation, of course, we're going to build those Silverlight applications that will do something with SharePoint. Okay, let me switch back to my presentation. Okay, and when we're going to build Silverlight applications, there's one important thing that you have to think about, which is, of course, how am I going to deploy my XAP file to the context of SharePoint? Usually, when you're going to build your own app, you would like to get it deployed automatically so the user doesn't have to upload it to your document library, stuff like that. And very basically said, you will have two options to deploy your XAP files. Either you can go and deploy your XAP file to the virtual file system, or you can deploy to the physical file system of SharePoint 2010. Now, there are a couple of differences between those two locations. First of all, the virtual file system, what is that? Well, that is everything that goes into your content database in SharePoint 2010. For example, all the stuff that you put inside a document library will be saved eventually in your content database. So the contents of a document library will, it's called the virtual file system. The physical file system is everything that you find in your SharePoint root, typically in template layouts. SharePoint root, by the way, is a thing that you may know as the 12 hive in SharePoint 2007. It's in SharePoint 2010, it's not called the 14 hive, that's the name of that folder, but it's called the SharePoint root. So if you hear me talking about the SharePoint root, that is C, program files, common files, and so on, till you've got that 14 template folder. As I said, there are not a lot of differences between those two different locations. First difference that you can see is that when you deploy a file to the virtual file system, you typically do that per site. When you deploy a file to the physical file system, you do that for the entire SharePoint server. So the scope is different. That means that if you make use of the physical file system, you only have to deploy that file once, and you can make use of it everywhere in your SharePoint environment for that server. You typically have to deploy to every site if you make use of the virtual file system. So that can be one decision point to choose between virtual and physical file system. Another decision point can be the following. I don't know if you guys know sandbox solutions in SharePoint 2010. Sandbox solutions are basically SharePoint solutions that you deploy to the level of your site collection without the need for an administrator to actually do that deployment. So it's a very nice technique. If you make use of sandbox solutions, you cannot deploy to the physical file system. So if you would like to build a Silverlight web part in a sandbox solution, you have to deploy to the virtual file system. For the rest, from the point of view of Silverlight, there is no difference between the virtual or the physical file system. Both of them will work just fine, as we're going to see later on. Now, the cool thing about Visual Studio 2010 that you probably will use if you're going to build applications for SharePoint 2010 is that building a SharePoint solution that deploys your XAP file either to the virtual or the physical file system will be very, very easy. And that's what my next slide is talking about. For example, if you would like to build a SharePoint solution in Visual Studio that is going to deploy your XAP file to the physical file system, what's the thing that you need to do? Well, you need to create what they call a mapped folder in Visual Studio. And when you create a mapped folder, you can select the folder from your 14, from your SharePoint root, to map with. And everything that you put in that folder in Visual Studio will be automatically deployed to your SharePoint root whenever the solution gets deployed. I will show you that in a second, how that's going to work. Very, very easy. If you would like to deploy to the virtual file system, the thing that you need to make use of in Visual Studio is called a module. Maybe you know modules from SharePoint 2007 inside your feature element manifest. Well, it's exactly the same in SharePoint 2010, but Visual Studio 2010 has support to generate those modules for you. Let me quickly show you what I'm talking about. So if I go to Visual Studio, let's create a new project over there, and I'm going to choose an empty SharePoint project. So SharePoint, empty SharePoint project. Let's say my clock application. Let's say I would like to deploy the XAP file for my clock. Let's hit OK. First thing that Visual Studio 2010 is going to come and ask you what kind of solution that you would like to build, deploy as a sandboxed or as a farm solution. By the way, I need to change my URL over here. If you plan to deploy to the physical file system, you have to pick the form solution because it doesn't work in sandbox solutions. And let's click finish. So when Visual Studio is Visual Studio project has been created, I can add, first of all, let's say a mapped folder. So you've seen that. Right click. In the drop down menu over here, you can go to add. Then you can pick the SharePoint mapped folder. And when you click that option, you will have a dialog where you can pick the folder to map to. See, this is the SharePoint root. And I can pick, for example, templates. And then go for layouts. That's typically the location that you would deploy to. Okay, and you will see that your map folder will become a real folder inside your Visual Studio project. And by default, you will get an application, sorry, a subfolder in that layout folder. So everything what you do over there, everything what you put in that folder will be deployed to that location that you specified. So if I would include my XAP file, okay. If I would deploy the SharePoint solution, then we would see that the XAP file would be deployed to the SharePoint root automatically. As you can see, very easy. This is the physical file system, the virtual file system. How is that going to work? Well, if you create a new item, you will notice that there is an item template in Visual Studio 2010, which is called a module. So let's click that one. Let's click add. And once again, you will notice that your module will actually look like a folder over here inside your Visual Studio project. In there, you will find your feature element manifest file. That's the XML that will actually contains the feature contents to deploy the files. And by default, you've got one file for free that will be deployed to the virtual file system, which is sample1.txt. What you usually do is you delete this one. And then I can pick, for example, my clock. And I can paste it over here, like this. So once again, when this solution is going to get built, my XAP file will be deployed. When my solution gets deployed, my XAP file will be deployed in this case, both to the physical and the virtual file system, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but I wanted to show both opportunities to you guys. Other nice thing about this module, see over here at the left-hand side, the XML. That is generated for you. It includes now a reference to the clock.xap, so you don't have to type that XML manually anymore that you had to do in SharePoint 2007 manually as a developer. Okay, now I'm not going to get this solution deployed. This is just a clock. Let's close this one. I'm going to deploy solutions that contains Silverlight applications later on in the rest of my demos. What's the thing that you need to do if you would like to build your own custom Silverlight web art? Well, you just have to build a pretty basic web art for SharePoint 2010. And the only action that that web art should do is it should generate some HTML that will tell the browser to render the Silverlight control inside web art. And the HTML that you need to generate is not very difficult. You can see it over here being displayed on my slide. It's just an object element that you need to render inside your HTML that contains a reference to, well, the application, which is Silverlight. And it contains, very important, a reference over here to the location of your XAP file. So this XAP file will be rendered inside the HTML, and it will display your custom application. To be honest with you guys, I don't know this HTML by heart, but I will show you in a second that you can just copy and paste that HTML from within Visual Studio. It generates automatically. You just have to paste it in inside your web art. Now, before we're going to build our own custom web art, there is one more thing that I need to talk about, which is the client object model of SharePoint 2010 that is also accessible from Silverlight. And what you will notice, I think, quite a lot if you're going to build custom Silverlight applications for SharePoint 2010 is that your Silverlight application will do something with content or data that is stored in SharePoint. Think about maybe you've got a task list and you would like to show, all the tasks in a Silverlight application. That's content that you will get from SharePoint. The clock that I just showed you doesn't do anything with content in SharePoint. It's just a basic clock. But usually you will see that you want to do something with the stuff that is stored in SharePoint. In SharePoint 2007, the only way how we could reach out for data remotely that is stored in SharePoint 2007 was to make use of the out-of-the-box web services. The cool new thing in SharePoint 2010, however, is that you can make use of very nice object models. You've got an object model for the .NET CLR, you've got an object model for SilverLight, and you also have an object model that you can make use of in JavaScript applications. Now, it is not my goal to explain to you the client object models in this session, but I'm going to use them. Later on today, I think the final session of today, I've got another session about the client object models, so we'll talk about those three different flavors in more detail for this for the demo that I'm going to show you. I'm just going to make use of the client object models. Important about those client object models, the design goals. Two of them. First of all, consistency. Secondly, efficiency. What do we mean with consistency? Well, if you are familiar with the server object models in SharePoint 2007, well, it will be very easy for you to understand the client object models of SharePoint 2010. If you're a SharePoint developer for SharePoint 2007, you probably know classes like SPList, SP Document Library, SP Site, SP Web. Well, we've got the same classes, equivalent classes in the client object models, but you will notice in my demos that they will drop, that they have dropped the SP prefix. So now you've got classes like List, Web, Document Library, List Item, and so on. Also, efficiency, very important. Efficiency is all about building performant applications, fast applications. Always think about, well, what's the data that you will need to have in your client application and only download, transfer that data from your server back to the client. Once again, I will explain those topics in more detail at the end of today. Okay. This is, by the way, the location where you can find the SilverLight client object model. In your SharePoint root, in template layouts client bin, you will find two files over there. One called microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight, and you've got another one, microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight.runtime, and you need to add a reference to both of them inside your SilverLight application to make use of the client object model. Okay, let me show my demo. Usually when I talk about SilverLight in SharePoint 2010, I show a demo that is actually replacing a small website that you may know from the internet. Do you guys know the website called YouTube? It's a small website on the internet. Well, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to build YouTube on top of SharePoint infrastructure? And that's the demo that I'm going to try to show to you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a SilverLight application that can play video files that are stored in SharePoint. Okay. I've did a little bit of preparations. I've got over here a document library that I called videos. And inside this document library, I just uploaded three video files. Doesn't matter what those video files are, just some screencasts that I made, and not very exciting. One thing that I have to mention about those files in this document library, if I check my properties, you will notice that every video has a title, including a field for the contents. And that's the same thing that you know from YouTube. You can give your video a title, and you can display, you can type some text that will describe the contents of that video. Why do I have that? Well, the application that I'm going to build in SilverLight will actually retrieve all the videos from this document library, show all the videos in a nice list, including the contents, and then I'm going to allow the user to click on one of those videos, and the videos should start playing inside the SilverLight application as well. So I've got a front end built in SilverLight for this videos document library. Let's get some work done. So I'm going to create a new project in Visual Studio, and I'm going to start off with a SilverLight project, of course, and let's call this the SharePoint Tube project. Let's hit OK. First thing that I'm going to do inside the SilverLight project in Visual Studio 2010 is, of course, I'm going to add a reference to the client object model because I would like to consume some data from SharePoint. And when Visual Studio is done loading, I'm going to add that reference. I really need to browse to it. So in my SharePoint root, I can go to 14 templates, layouts, and over there the client bin folder. And I need to have both files. So So as you can see over here, I've got a reference to both of them. So far, so good. And let's write some XAML. You know, XAML is the XML language that you typically use to build SQLite applications. And by the way, in my demo, I'm going to write XAML manually over here. Although in Visual Studio 2010, we've got support for drag and drop operations in the designer. But well, I'm a little bit hardcore, I think. I'm not very fond of that design functionality, so I prefer to write my XAML manually. So in my SQLite application, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make use of a listbox control. You know, a listbox control that can contain, of course, listbox items. Listbox item. Come on. There you go. And in every listbox item, for example, you can display a text block that will display some text. For example, a video title like this. Let's make it a little bit bigger. Say font size, I don't know, 16. And the font weight is equal to bold, whatever. Okay. Now, for every video, I don't just want to display the video title. I also would like to display a second text block. Whoops. That will contain, of course, my contents. Video contents. And I'm going to wrap those two text blocks in a control from SQLite that's called the stack panel. And what is this stack panel going to do? Well, the stack panel is going to allow you to line up multiple controls in a specific orientation. For example, the vertical orientation, like this. So my list item will look as follows. I've got the title and I've got my video contents. So my list box will look like this if I've got multiple list box items. Let me copy this XAML. Okay, so you've got a bunch of them. Now, the tricky thing, of course, is that I don't know upfront how many listbox items that I need to have in this listbox because I can have a variable number of videos uploaded into that document library. So defining hard-coded a bunch of video of listbox items is not going to work. How can I solve this in SQLite? Well, in SQLite, of course, you can make use of data binding. And that's a technique that I would like to show you. So I'm going to have a listbox dot what is it? Item template. And over there I've got a data template like this. And I can grab, for example, the contents of a listbox item, move them over here. And let's remove my listbox items like this. Okay. Of course, I don't need to make use of hard-coded text properties of my text blocks. How do you specify which properties should be displayed over here in this location? Well, in SQLite, you can make use of the following syntax. You can make use of the keyword binding, and then you can specify a name of a property, in this case, title. So whatever data, whatever object that I will use to data bind, in this case to this listbox item, the title property value will be retrieved and displayed over here in the text of the text block. And I'm going to do the same thing for the binding for my contents. Okay. Final thing that's left for me to do is to give my listbox a specific name. Let's name this listbox LB, for example. So far for the XAML, pretty basic, but that's well the structure that I'm going to make use of. Now it's time to get some real code done, of course. I'm going to switch to my code behind over here in the constructor of my SQLite user control. I'm going to write some code that will connect to the document library, get all the videos, and visualize those videos inside my listbox that I've created. So for doing that, I'm going to make use of the client object model. And in the client object model, we've got a class which is called the client context. Oops. And I'm going to create a new client context. And over here, I can specify the URL of a SharePoint site that contains my videos. And that's the URL of the SharePoint site that I just showed you. Once again, if you would like to learn more about the client context class and the code that I'm going to write in this code block, I suggest that you come back for the object model session later on today. But now I'm just going to define a list item collection. Let's call it items, and I'm going to specify that it's equal to my context.web.lists.getListByTitle for the videos list. And over there, I'm going to get my items, and I'm going to get all of them by making use of the camel query, create all items query, like this. Okay, so this single line of code is going to allow me to, well, download all the items from, in this case, the videos document library. I need to load my items, and I need to execute my query. One thing that you have to keep in mind when you're accessing SharePoint data through the client object model in SQLite, you always get your data asynchronously. That means on a background thread. So you need to define at least two callback functions over here when you will get the data, one for success and one for fail. So let's define we've got a success callback and we've got a fail callback. I need to write that code, of course. Okay, so let's have a void success, where the sender is an object, and we've got success event args, and we've got a fail, and we've got fail event args as well. So those two callback methods will be called whenever something goes wrong or when we actually get the data. Let's say when something goes wrong, I'm just going to display a message box. And let's say the exception is being displayed like this. Now, remember, the callback for fail is happening in a background thread. And it happens to be in SQLite that you cannot touch the UI from a background thread. Just the same issue that you have in Windows Forms development or in WPF development. So what you need to do, technically said, you need to marshal the background thread back to the UI thread so you can touch the UI from there. In SQLite, that is very easy. You can make use of your dispatcher where you can do a begin invoke. And I'm going to make use of a small lambda expression to accomplish that. Oops. Like this. So the begin invoke is going to marshal the background thread back to the UI thread. So this piece of code is executed back in the UI thread so I can display my message box. And this is a structure that you will see quite a lot in SQLite development, especially with the client object model in SharePoint when you get your data asynchronously. By the way, if you've never seen this syntax over here, this is a lambda expression. If you really don't know what it's all about, I recommend you to check it out because it will become very important for SharePoint developers because a lot of stuff can be done over there. So I'm going to have the same structure over here when we receive the data. This dot dispatcher dot begin invoke. Okay. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to build a collection of items that I will data bind with my list box in the XAML that I defined. And to be able to do that, I need to define a class. And let's call this one the video item. And on that class, I'm going to define some properties. Let's say I've got a property called title. And I've got a property called content, and I've got a property called URL. You know, title and contents, I need to have those properties for my data binding. Why do I need to have the URL? Well, remember, if the user is going to click on one of my videos, I would like to start playing that video, so I need to know the location of that video. Okay. So when I receive my data, I'm going to build a generic list of video items. Let's call it video items. And I'm going to build a for each that will loop over all my list items in my items collection. And by the way, I forgot to declare this variable at the level of my class. So the items variable is a collection of list items. And for every list item, I'm going to specify, well, in my video items, I'm going to add a new video item. Let's declare some properties over here. And let's set the title equal to my item title. And for the, what was it, the contents. And this is exactly the reason why I need to have that video item class that contains strongly typed properties. See, the properties on my list item, they're not strongly typed, and to be able to do data binding out of the box with Silverlight, you need to have strongly typed properties. Notice I'm not yet filling up the URL, because let's say I don't know the name of the property by heart that contains the location of my video file. I will come back to that in a second. But when my loop is done, I'm going to specify that I would like to display those video items in my list box, and I can do that by setting the item source. I'm going to set that item source equal to my video items collection, like this. So that's the data binding part. Let's build this Silverlight application, and just to be on the safe side, I'm going to test this Silverlight application already out in SharePoint to see if we can see some results. I don't have a custom web art yet, so I'm just quickly going to make use of the out-of-the-box Silverlight web art, the one that I showed you earlier in my session. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to navigate to my document library. Let's upload the XAP file that I just created. Projects. SharePoint Tube. I'm going to upload my XAP file. Okay. Let it save. And let's copy the location of my XAP file. I'm not going to show my Silverlight control on the homepage of my SharePoint sites because I would like to have some more. I would like to have some more space to show it. So I'm going to create a new WebArt page. Let's create a new WebArt page. Let's call it SharePoint Tube, so I can have a WebArt zone stretching the entire page. Okay, let's add one. Let's make use of the media and content Silverlight web art, just as I did before. Let's paste the URL of my XAP file. Let's hit OK. And let's modify the properties of this web art. Let's give it a another width. Let's save. And there we go. We've got my Silverlight application that, as you can see, will get data from my document library. I see the title of the video with the contents. If I click on it, nothing is going to happen, but that's the next step. Now that I've got my Silverlight application being displayed over here on my page, I can go back to my code and think about the issue that I still have to solve. Remember, for my video item, I also need to have the URL. But the thing is, let's say I don't know the name of the property by heart. Anybody knows the name of the property that will actually specify the location of your file in a document library? Well, let's say I don't know that either. To solve this issue, usually I make use of a very nice tool that you can download for free on the internet. It's called Fiddler. Do you guys know Fiddler? It's like a HTTP monitor that will allow you to show HTTP messages that are being sent from your client to your server and from your server to your client. And you can really see the contents of every request and response. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to refresh my page over here. Okay, so the data is downloaded again from SharePoint. And if I now switch to Fiddler, you can see all kinds of requests coming in. And this last request is actually the request that will go to, my client object model. And the cool thing about Fiddler is that you can now display the raw contents of your response. See, this is the data that is being sent from SharePoint to your Silverlight application. So what I need to do over here is I just need to look for the property that I'm interested in. And actually, it's already this one. See, over here, I've got file ref that will contain the document library, including the file name. See, this is the file. So let's copy the name of the property to the clipboard. Thank you, Fiddler. And let's go back to my code over here, and let's paste the file ref property over there. Just as an example, how easy it is to catch the information that is being returned from SharePoint and sent to your Silverlight application. So far, so good. The next step that I would like to do, of course, is I would like to allow the user to click on one of my videos, and that video should be playing, let's say, another control. Playing videos in Silverlight is very, very easy because we've got a control for doing that. And the name of that control is called the media element. So I'm switching back to my XAML. And in my XAML, besides my list box, I'm going to define a media element. and I'm going to wrap my list box and my media element also in a stack panel. And in the stack panel, I'm going to say that the orientation is equal to horizontal. So I will display, first of all, my list box and next to it, the media player. Okay, so far so good. I need to give my media player a specific name. Let's say the player. And to make sure that my videos are being played in the correct aspect ratios, I'm going to specify that the width of my Silverlight control will be 700 pixels and the height will be 375. So the list box width can be set to 200 pixels. Why do I do that? Well, if you subtract 700 minus 200, the value that you have left is the exactly the ratio that I use to record my videos. So you will not have stretched videos whatsoever. So far, so good. I need to have an event on my list box as well. I need to specify that when the selection changed, I'm going to build a new event handler. Let's switch to that code. Okay, this is the event handler when the user is going to select the video. The only thing that you need to do now at this point in time, you need to set the URL, the source property of your media element. And you can define a new URI. And the URI will actually make use of a prefix of my site plus. And now I need to have the URL of the video item. How can I do that? Well, I can have access to the listbox.selected item, but it's an object, so I need to cast it to a video item so I can grab the URL. So this line of code is going to grab the URL from the selected item and build it into a URI that will be set as the source property of my media element. I think this is already good enough, so let's build. Whoops, what did I forget? Oh. Let's build again. And very quickly, I can navigate back to my document library, upload the XAP file once again. SharePoint Tube. Okay. Let's hit save. And let's go back to the page. SharePoint Tube. Oh. Now I need to change the height of my web part a little bit to match the values that I entered. What did I say? 700, I think. Let's hit apply. Stop editing. And what is the result? Well, now if I select, for example, this video, and you can see that it starts playing next to my list box. If I select another one, you will see that it starts playing as well. So this is already pretty nice. No? Okay, I can feel that you guys are not yet excited about this demo. Let's try to make it a little bit better. You know, when I would be watching this video, for example, at night, this is very small to look at. What I would like to do is I would like to allow the user to, let's say, click on the video and switch that video to full screen mode. That's a thing that you know from YouTube as well, of course. How are you going to do that? Well, it turns out that this is actually very easy to accomplish inside Silverlight. What you need to do, first of all, you need to have an event handler for your media element. So when the user is going to click on when the user is going to click on the video that is playing, I would like to switch to full screen. So the event that I'm going to catch is the mouse left button down. Okay, and let's write some code. Okay. And to speed up things a little bit, I'm going to grab some code that I prepared earlier over here. Okay, so the code that will get executed when I click on the playing video, I'm going to set the isFillScreen property of the current host content to the value of isFillScreen, but inverted. So if we are in full screen, we will go back. If we're not in full screen, we will go to full screen. This code will already work, but it will not give you the desired effect, because if you would execute this code, you would see that your video will be playing at the top left of your screen with a lot of white space around it. So the thing that I need to do is I need to stretch my video as well, so it will fill the entire screen. to do that, I need to attach an event handler. Let's do that over here. Okay, so when the full screen changed event is being triggered, I'm going to call my method that I called content full screen changed, and that's actually this method. It's not a lot of code, not very difficult code. So when we're going to change the full screen, I'm going to verify if we are running in full screen. Then I'm going to set the width and the height property of my user control to the width and the height of the screen. And because remember, we're running in full screen, I'm going to set the width and the height of the player to full screen as well. And I'm going to set the width of my list box to zero, so you don't see the list box. I don't want to see the list box. When we go back from full screen to normal mode, I'm going to revert back to the default values, and the list box width should be 200 as well. Let's build. And let's quickly verify if this is going to give us the desired effect. So let's go to this document library. Let's upload a new XAP file. Let's hit OK. And let's go to the page once again. Let's click on this video. Let's click on it. As you can see, it will go to full screen. As you can see, I'm running in a widescreen resolution. If I would be running in a normal resolution, you would see, you wouldn't see the white bars around the playing video. But well, this is already pretty nice, I think. Cool. Now, of course, we're still not yet done. At this point in time, if the user should, if the user wants to see my Silverlight application, the user has to upload the XAP file to a document library, copy the URL, set the property of the Silverlight web part, and so on. I'm going to fix that issue by building my own web part that will actually show this Silverlight application. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a new project to my solution, and I'm going to go for a SharePoint project. Let's say SharePoint Tube web parts. Deploy as a farm solution. Let's click Finish. First thing that I'm going to do in this Silverlight, SharePoint project, I'm going to add a map folder, just like I showed you before, to the template layout folder. Okay. And I'm going to grab my XAP file, of course, and I'm going to put that inside the map folder. Okay, there we go. So far, so good. Now we need to build the web part, so let's add a new item. Going to make use of a normal web part. Let's say the SharePoint Tube web part will be the name. Remember that I told you building a web part that will show a Silverlight control is not very difficult. The only thing that that web part should do is it should generate some HTML. And let's do that in the render contents method. And I told you, well, I don't know that HTML by heart, but if I go back, you know, when you create a Silverlight project, for free, you get a testing project inside Visual Studio as well that contains a test page that will render your Silverlight control. And if you open up that test page, you will just see the HTML that you need to copy-paste inside your Silverlight web art. See over here, we've got the object tag, and I'm just going to grab this one, copy it to the clipboard. Thank you very much, Visual Studio. Let's paste it over here. The only thing that you need to do is you actually need to replace the double quotes with single quotes, or you can escape them, whatever you would like to do. Let's replace them with the single quote. There you go. And let's align this a little bit better, like this. So this is the HTML that will be generated by my web part. Final thing that's left for me to do is, of course, specify the location where the XAP file is coming from. So underscore layouts. How did I call my folder? I forgot. Let's verify that. SharePoint Tube web parts. Like this. Okay, so that's everything that you have to do inside that web part to get it up and running in SharePoint. Let's build my code. And let's deploy the web part so I can show you the end result. By the way, I forgot to do one thing. I need to specify the explicit width and the height of my web part as well. according to the width and the height that I used inside my SQLite application. So let's build again, and let's get the web part deployed. Build succeeded, right click, deploy. It's going to take a couple of seconds to get the web part deployed to SharePoint. And I'm really going to prove to you guys that, I'm not faking all of this, so let's navigate to the document library that contains the XAP file for the first demo that I showed you. I'm going to remove the XAP file from the document library. Then I will go back to that page. We will see that the SQLite web part is failing. I will remove it, and I will replace it with my own web part that I just created inside Visual Studio. Usually when I have to wait in SharePoint 2010, I tell some jokes about Dutch people, but I don't think that's a good idea today. No, that's a joke, of course. So when SharePoint 2010 is finally done loading this page, it's because of the recycle of the apples during the deployment, of course, that we have to wait. I can delete that XAP file. So let's go to the SharePoint Cube XAP file. I don't need to have it there anymore. Let's delete it. Let's go to the page once again. We will see that the web part will fail because the XAP file is gone. And actually, I can remove that entire web part. So I grab this one. Let's click delete. OK. And now I can choose to add another web part from the custom group, my SharePoint Cube web part. Let's hit add. And I don't have to configure anything. As you can see, the SQLite application is loading, and the functionality that I've got over there is still working. So that is probably the behavior that you would like to give to your end users. Just deploy the solution, add the web part, you're done. Okay. Now, at this point in time, my custom web part is not doing a lot if you compare it to the out-of-the-box SQLite web part. The only thing that it does extra is that the fact that it's pre-configured. But if you build your own SQLite web parts, you can also build advanced SQLite web parts. And what are advanced SQLite web parts? Well, maybe you know techniques from normal web part development, like exposing custom properties or making connectable web parts. There are also techniques that you can apply to SQLite web parts. And I would like to show you some of those techniques. The thing that I would like to do is the following. Maybe you noticed in my code, I hard-coded the name of the document library that contains my videos. I have a string over there, videos. That's not very good. If the videos library is called something else, it's not going to work. So what I would like to do is I would like to build a property on my web part that is going to allow the user to specify the name of the document library that we would like to make use of to actually show those videos. How is that going to work? Well, the only thing that you have to do on your web part, you have to build that property, decorate it with web browsable, decorate it with personalizable, like a normal web part. And then you need to find a way to actually pass the property value from your from your web part to your SQLite application. And that's a little bit of a challenge because the web part is running on the server, SQLite application is running on the client, and you cannot send it directly to your server. But luckily, SQLite has a technique for that. Remember the HTML that you generate to render the SQLite application inside your web browser? Well, over there in the HTML, you can define an additional parameter called initParams, where you can specify a value, and that value will be sent to your SQLite application, and there is an application startup event where you can receive it. So that's the technique that I would like to show you in my demo as well. So over here, I've got my SQLite web part. And over here, I'm going to build that property. Let's have a string. Let's say videos library is the name of my property. Let's decorate it with the web browsable attribute. And let's decorate it with the personalizable attribute as well. Just like you would do with a normal web part, right? And then I'm going to add a parameter to the HTML. And let's call this one initParams. And I need to come up with a key. Let's say videoSlip is equal to. And then I'm going to have a parameter that I will paste into using a string.format. Okay. And that will be this.videos library. So what's going to happen? When the web part is going to generate the HTML, it will make use of this property value and it will paste that one inside the HTML. Final thing left for me to do is to actually make use of this web part, make use of this data inside my Silverlight application. So let's go back to the Silverlight application. Over there, you've got at the level of your application, the application startup event. And in this parameter, you can receive your init params. So what you can do is you can access, for example, e.initParams. I have to verify how I called it, videoslib, like this. So this will contain the value that you pasted in over there inside the HTML. And I'm going to pass that value, let's say, to the document library, to the constructor of my Silverlight control. Of course, it's not yet compiling because I need to write some code over there. So in this constructor, let's say I've got a param called videos library, like this. And instead of making use of the hard-coded string videos, let's make use of the configured value. So that's the flow from the data and the web part to actually make use of that data inside your Silverlight web part. Let's build and see if everything is working. Build progress, build started. Should be completed. Yeah, build succeeded. Let's grab my XAP file. And let's put it once again in the map folder. I'm running beta 2 of Visual Studio 2010. And in Visual Studio 2010 beta 2, there is no automatic way to add that XAP file after every successful build to this location. But it will be fixed in RTM, so you don't have to copy that file manually anymore. But in beta 2, you have to do that. So now I can right-click deploy my web part again and see if everything is working in SharePoint. Build succeeded. Let's go here. Let's refresh the page. And if everything goes okay, I will not see any videos being displayed, first of all. Why is that? Well, I didn't specify a default value for the videos document library. So the object model, the web part is going to make use of the object model to look for a document library with an empty name. And because there is no default value, so it will not will get any data, of course, because there is no document library with an empty name. Oh, we still have videos. Probably the issue at this point in time is that not the latest version of my XAP file has been downloaded to the client. So what you can do is you can close your browser and navigate to the page once again or clear your cache. If you're running Internet Explorer 8, you can make use of your developer tools in Internet Explorer 8. And over here in the cache, you can specify always refresh from the server. So then you're sure that the latest version of the XAP file is always downloaded. And let's refresh the page. See, we have an error. You can see that at the bottom of the page. That's okay. That was expected. And now let's go to the properties. And you will notice at the bottom, there's a new property where I can type the name of the document library that contains my videos. And let's hit OK. And if everything is OK. Oops. What did I do wrong in my code? Did I make a typo? Dum-dum. This is my web part. Oh, init params. There we go. You guys already noticed that, but you wanted to see me fail, no? thank you very much. Okay. You know, a room full of developers is like the best IntelliSense that you can get. I really have to build that one into Visual Studio, I think. Feedback. Anyway, let's try again. Deploy succeeded. Let's go here. So when the page is loaded, hopefully, once again, I'm going to see some videos. because now I use the correct parameter inside the HTML. There we go. Once again, we've got video, so everything is working again. This web part is now much more functional, let's say, because the user can specify the location or the name of the document library where the videos are coming from, which is not as static as anymore as I did in my the first demo that I showed you. Okay, now I can feel that you guys are still not yet impressed with the stuff that I'm showing you right now. That's why I've got one demo left. I want to do something extra compared to the SharePoint Connections conference earlier this year. And what's the thing that I would like to do? I would like to show you a pretty nice visualization that I've been working with for some time now. For the people that have an iPhone or an iPod player, you know that visualization. It's called CoverFlow. You know, on an iPod, you've got that very nice visualization of all your albums, and you can flip through them, and you've got those nice effects. Well, it happens to be on CodePlex, you know, the open source website from Microsoft, there is a CoverFlow control that you can make use of in Silverlight. If you're interested in that control, you can go to silverlightcoverflow.coplex.com. It's a free component that you can download. It comes with full source code. And I used that CoverFlow control in an example that I've built for SharePoint 2010. And what is the example that I've built? Well, I think everybody knows in SharePoint already in 2007, and we've got that very boring announcement list that contains typically news items. See, this is my announcement. This is my announcement list. And what I did is, I've tried to build a nicer visualization of this announcement list using CoverFlow. So what I did is, I built a Silverlight control that would display information from all the announcements being displayed as CoverFlow. And let me open up the demo that I prepared. I'm not going to write the code completely from scratch, because it's almost exactly the same code that we discussed in the previous demo. The only thing that will be different is that I'm not using a list box anymore to display my SharePoint data, but I'm making use of that CoverFlow control. So let me show you the XAML, first of all. You will see it's not a lot of XAML, not very difficult to understand. Okay, when Visual Studio is downloading, I can show you that. Okay, so see, no more list box, but I've got a CoverFlow control. I've got an item template and a data template. So far, exactly the same. Over here, I define a stack panel that will be able to display the text box. Text block for the title. I've got a text block for the body. I've got a text block for created by, modified on. So I'm displaying some metadata. I'm also displaying a hyperlink button, so the user can click on that button, which will be represented as a hyperlink, to navigate to the announcement item. I'm also defining a background, which is a nice shading effect going from white to gray. This is the color. And then you will notice that I've got another block of Silverlight at the bottom over here, which is actually a copy of this block. But as you can see, I'm applying a transformation. So this transformation is going to mirror the first block of Silverlight. So it will be mirrored. So it will result in a nice reflection effect that you may know. So it will seem that my announcements are floating in space above a glass plate, let's say. For the rest, this is exactly the same. The code behind the scenes is also exactly the same, almost exactly the same. See, over here, I've got the constructor where I will get a reference to the announcement list. Okay. Now, notice that in this announcement list, I'm making use of a camel query. Why is that? Well, I'm only going to get news items that are not yet expired, and I'm going to sort them in the descending order. So the newest ones are being displayed on top. I will get my announcements. Over here, I will receive my data. I'm going to build a collection of items. See, I've got... that data class for the title, the body, the author, modified URL, that kind of stuff. And as you can see, I'm not going to put them directly into a list, but I'm going to put them in a queue Why is that? Well, I'm not going to display them all at the same point in time, but I'm going to display announcements that are flying in like every 200 milliseconds. So when you show the control, you've got a nice effect that it seems like the announcements are flying in. It looks nicer than a plain CoverFlow control, I think. That's all the code. I already deployed this thing to SharePoint, and let me show you the result. If I go to a page that I prepared over here, the announcements page, there you go. See them flying in, and you can actually scroll through them. You can click to them. Notice the nice shading effect at the bottom. This is not, well, this is not an image that is being displayed. This is really the data that is mirrored. I can click over here on the item. That's going to display it. I can go back. So I think this is a nicer visualization than the boring announcement list. And it's not very difficult to build. If you know the code that we discussed in the first example, well, it's exactly the same besides using the CoverFlow control. Okay, so that was a demo that I wanted to show you. Okay. Final thing that I would like to talk about, also very interesting, I think, for SharePoint developers, is the opportunity that we have in Silverlight 3 and Silverlight 4 that will allow you to run Silverlight applications out of your browser. Normally, a Silverlight application is being displayed in a web page, being displayed in your browser, of course, but since Silverlight 3, it is possible to take that application and, well, run it outside of the context of your browser as a real application, let's say, running on your desktop, started from your start menu. As I said, already available in Silverlight 3 and Silverlight 4, they added some additional control for you as a developer, for example, for the frame, for the Chrome better, so you can define the border, if the application should be maximized, minimized, that kind of stuff. You can also run full trust applications in Silverlight 4, so they're not running in the sandbox anymore. And I think, as I said, it's a great scenario to expose your SharePoint data even offline by making use of Silverlight as well. And let me show you how easy it is to get this up and running. For example, over here, remember the fancy visualization of the announcement list? Well, if you go to the properties of your Silverlight project, you will see that there is an option that you can enable that says enable running application out of the browser. You just enable that option. You can specify the title of your window, the title of the application. You can specify a specific width and a height. Let's say I've got 700 by 300, something like that. You can define icons, stuff like that. I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to, build my Silverlight application and deploy it again to SharePoint to show you the result. This one. Deploy. When I refresh the page, when my deployment is succeeded, you will not notice anything different for the Silverlight application being displayed in my browser, but it will be possible for me to specify that I would like to take that Silverlight application and run it outside of the browser as well. And the only thing that I need to do is I need to right-click on top of that Silverlight control and select the correct menu item. Now, as a developer, you have more control about specifying how you would like to notify your user that the application can be installed out of the browser as well. For example, you can have a button in your application that says install on the computer or something like that. But what I'm going to show you is, well, the basic behavior that you get by just enabling that checkbox. So if I right-click on my Silverlight application, notice that there is the menu item that now says install this one onto my computer. Let's click on this one. I can add it to the start menu if I want to the desktop. Let's hit OK. And you will notice that, well, in a second, hopefully. Come on. There goes my demo. If everything went OK, I should be seeing over here the Silverlight application being displayed. Why is it not working? Let's close my browser. Now, this is very odd. What should have happened? What should have happened over here? We should have seen the very fancy animation once again, but now being rendered not inside your browser, but inside this application running outside of my browser. Now the trick that Silverlight is actually doing, what you see over here is actually an instance of Internet Explorer that is running inside this window, but you don't see it. So the toolbars and stuff like that are hidden, and there is a generated page that will actually display, should display, as you can see, your Silverlight control. Once again, unfortunately, it doesn't work, and I have no idea why it doesn't work. I've showed this demo like 20 times, I think, but this should have been the end result. Okay, let me switch back to my presentation and wrap up this session. I think Silverlight and SharePoint 2010 is actually a pretty cool combination. You've got quite some interesting stuff that you can do, and I think it will be very important to give the users the opportunity to visualize their SharePoint data in a more attractive way, let's say, instead of watching data in a boring list, have it animated, let's say, in a nicer a control like the CoverFlow control that I showed you before. If you would like to learn more about Silverlight, I've got some resources over there. Also for the client object model, I've got a link over there. If you're interested in seeing some more demo stuff, developer stuff, you can go to Channel 9, where there's a lot of SharePoint-related content. And of course, you can come to my next session at the end of the day about the client object models. For now, I would like to thank you for being here. I hope you enjoyed my session, and I hope I've been able to convince you that SharePoint and Silverlight is a really cool combination.